Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at 1043thefan.com. Presented by Siltahara Motors, the home of the zero down with Chapter 7 and 13 bankruptcies. Regardless of your financial standing, no one should be without a vehicle. Visit the special financing section at sthmotors.com.
Well, Millennial Ben.
I had it. I just didn't know if you said it or if Ben pushed the button. I forgot how it worked.
No, I say it all the time.
You do.
Mark has never said it.
No. He can't remember.
Benny and I are both laughing.
We can't remember.
We're both like, can you imagine Mark trying to do that? The butcher?
No chance.
No chance. No chance. No chance.
I'm joking.
No way. By the way, before I get to question Stoke here, love this one. Is it just me or I'm so excited to have the greatest small receiver ever to play for the Broncos on the morning show? Welcome, Wes Welker.
Wow! Thank you. Look, I've been called, you know, obviously a lot worse. There's no, you can't go down that road with me and ruffle my feathers.
No.
You just can't.
No
it
way.
Just, it doesn't work against me.
How many years in the NFL?
15.
Yeah. 15 years in the NFL.
15.
You think you're going to get under this guy's skin?
Right. Come on. I'll pull a Schlereth. I'll just look at my two Super Bowl rings.
Right.
You know?
I mean, really, when you consider it, I mean, I'm gonna pump your tires right now.
Come on, Mike. Talk to me.
I mean, when you think about the history of the NFL, to be the kind of player you were coming out of this college that you played in, and to be able to have a 15-year career, I would say that would put you in the, what, less than 1% of all players who played in the NFL history that can boast, match that kind of a resume?
I was blessed to be around a lot of good teammates and coaches that kind of helped.
It. We're
helped,
not doing an interview here,
guide.
Okay, after practice. Okay? What are you going to follow up with? I'm just trying to get better today. Huh? I'm going to try to stay within myself.
Brother, this guy stinks.
I'm going to try to stay within myself for the next hour. Not get too high, not to get too low. Jesus.
Love it. Yeah, Mike, you know. Look,
come on.
I never thought
pump
15 years. I mean, come on,
bit.
15 years. I mean, I never thought. I was hoping to last 5, then you get to 10, and you just keep grinding, and the just next thing you know is 15. I think I only played about 5 full seasons, though, in those 15. Every other year I was hurt. It was a grind. It was fun, though, and enjoyed it. So certainly blessed, though. 15 years. I mean, come on. A lot of, you know. I will say this, though. When I look back, it was, you know, my time, obviously, with Peyton Manning. And he's about to go in the Hall of Fame. But seriously, we are good friends. But what I learned from him, you know, and how to go about your business on the football field, especially how to hold yourself accountable as a wide receiver and know where to be and be there. And how that trust with the quarterback, how that works. And then when I was able to come to Denver, you know, I tore my Achilles my 8th year in the league, and I'm sitting there like I'm done with football. And Mike Shanahan gave me a 1-year deal here. And I came here, and the coaching staff really appreciated what I brought here because of my accountability with the young quarterback, Jay Cutler. And how that rubbed off on the rest of the wide receivers and just being where you're supposed to be, having that trust with a quarterback, putting that work in, developing, you know, that bond, you know, and through work. And so when it is 3rd or 4th down, you know where you're going to be. And it's just like clockwork. You're not overthinking things. And that all came from Peyton Manning.
So I know we have a lot of fun with you and the Peyton thing and the baby Bjorn and all that. And,
yeah, that's real.
You know, my best friend, Peyton Manning.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
but seriously, we're and I'm 100% serious. How did that friendship come to be? Where did it?
Well, it started in college.
Really?
Yeah, you know, they just had the Manning Passing Academy.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw that.
I just assumed it was with Indy. Your days with Indy. But
no, you know, he's a Louisiana guy.
Yeah.
I'm 2 hours away from New Orleans.
Yeah.
And they had the Manning Passing Academy. It started up when I was in college. And, you know, it was really his dad. And you know, he was at Tennessee. And they would have counselors from around the country that went to, you know, a college. And so we were right there 2 hours away. So I would go and be a counselor there, right? And you know, you go out there and you work with the kids, and then in the evenings, you know, it's great. You have a great time. You have fun, and Archie's always up there. Hey, y'all go out there. You know, obviously a different time back in, you know, 90, you know, whatever, 5, 96. You know, y'all can go out. Y'all have fun, but, you know, one thing you got to do is be back here at 6:30 for coaches' meetings. And we enjoyed ourselves, and that's where we first developed our friendship, and just during the summer, and that was it. And then, obviously, when I went to Indy and spent 4 years there. But it started in college.
Okay. I didn't know that. No, all right. See, learn something new every day. Yes, thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm enlightened. You're talking about how the role you played here as a veteran. Do the Broncos need to have that kind of receiver here?
You know, I remember last year talking about it and how Demaryius would be a good fit here, mm-hmm. Thomas. He was looking for a job. We had him on. And I thought that veteran presence, how it could wear off on a guy like Cortland Sutton, Tim Patrick, Jerry Jeudy, you know, the young room. Demaryius is that type of wide receiver. He was with Peyton. Right. So he knows accountability. He knows work ethic. He knows how to go about working, not just work to work. Like, there's a method to that madness, and Demaryius knows it. And I thought he would be a perfect fit for that wide receiver room. Looking at it now, I mean, you have some pros in there. I mean, Cortland Sutton now going into what, year four, year three, four?
But he just missed the whole year.
He did. You know? He did. But a guy like Tim Patrick also, you know, who's a pro. You got Cortland Sutton. But you still have the youth there. And I'm not in that room to know enough to know. I really like their wide receiver coach. That's the one thing I go to during training camp. Is watch the wide receivers first thing, their drills and how they work and how they come in and out of the breaks, his coaching points. And so they got a great wide receiver coach. I love how he coached them. Coach Azani, he does a great job with them. So I think that's a big check mark. But you do like to have that veteran presence in that wide receiver room, and they don't quite have that, especially with the youth that they have.
Exactly. How would a Brandon Stokely have been able to help out Jerry Jeudy last year? While he was going through the drops and everything like that.
Stokely! Wow! You know, I mean, for me, I would have said, hey, we got to keep working. We got to keep working. You know, ball drills. You can never catch the football enough. I went through spurts where I struggled with catching the football. It's not easy. But just to let him know that, you know, hey, this is just the first step here. And just being a sounding board, staying positive, and then just getting to work. Like, hey, let's go. We're gonna continue to work. It's okay. And just really staying positive with the Jerry Jeudy and just talking about, hey, we got to just get extra work in. And this is just a bump in the road. Those types of things is how I would approach it if I was a veteran.
And I'm sure he heard that, you know, from other players and coaches, but there is something about hearing it from somebody who's been there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And went through it.
Yes.
You know, I mean, you could have probably, in that situation, you could have asked somebody in the Broncos video department, hey, go find, you know, 15 of my drops,
right.
You know, over my career. Put it all together on a loop, and me and Jerry Jeudy are going to sit down and watch it and talk, right?
Yes.
That's invaluable.
That's right. Well, that's important. That's one of the reasons why I was able to play as long as I played. But also, that, you know, you're talking about the wide receiver room. How about the quarterback room?
Right.
How about the quarterback room?
I would say every room.
Well, when you have
every
a young
room.
Quarterback, and that room is more important than any room. Obviously, the quarterback position, right? So when you have a young guy that you're hoping to start for the first time and be the guy, and he's looking over his shoulder and it's Jeff Sinking Driscoll.
Right.
I mean, how much is Jeff Driscoll going to really help
right.
this guy out?
Right.
So to me, that didn't help Drew.
Why? Why was John Elway so reluctant to bring in that kind of a quarterback?
This is really my fault.
It's curious,
yeah,
isn't
no,
it?
That, right, it is. Because he knows, of all people, he knows how important that is for a young quarterback.
That sounding board, right?
Right.
Yes.
He knows that. And so I'm not sure. I'm not sure, you know, what the thought process there was with Jeff Driscoll. But, you know, obviously it didn't. it didn't work out either way. I mean, Jeff Driscoll, when he played, wasn't very good, and Drew Locke didn't have that veteran behind him. That's important, you know, just for the reasons that you just said about the wide receivers. When you're struggling as a quarterback, wouldn't it be nice to look over and you have a guy like Alex Smith behind you just to kind of help you out? He's been through it all.
Right.
Hey, what do you see here? What do you do? What should I be looking at when I'm watching film? I mean, what do you think Drew Locke's been doing, you know, was doing with Peyton Manning? It's just like, hey, the process. He did it the year before, talking about the offseason process. Well, what are you looking at when you're watching film? What are your reads and progressions? Well, if you have a guy like Alex Smith in the room, a guy that's actually done it, a veteran type of quarterback, that guy can guide a young quarterback, and that's invaluable.
Yeah. You're right. Now, I want to get to question mark, question Stoke, presented by Breaks Plus. And this is my question. This goes back to something we were talking about just about 15 minutes ago. You were emphatic. I mean, the question was barely out of my mouth when you said, no, I don't believe Drew Locke can be a franchise quarterback. I got to believe George Payton looks at his current quarterback situation and understands this probably isn't my long-term answer, right?
Yes.
He probably has the same kind of critique of Drew that you do, okay? Then why? Why did he take such a
conservative
approach to the quarterback position in his first offseason? That's my question, Stoke, to you.
That's a great question, Mike. Maybe he's taking the first year to really kind of evaluate who he wants here. And, you know, with the unknown with Vic and his coaching staff, maybe when if you're looking at the future and say, I might have to move on from these coaches offensively, and that's when I'll really try to attack this quarterback position and figure it out here. He was aggressive with everything else. Von Miller, just coming back on one-year deal. You know, they didn't extend him. They could have released him. 1 year. Kyle Fuller, 1 year. Darby, you know, a lot of money. I mean, they're putting a lot into Shelby Harris. They're a lot into winning now.
Those are short-term moves. You draft a quarterback, that's a long-term move.
That is, but they're in win-now mode. And with everything else but the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you could have, you're right. That's a long-term view if you do draft a quarterback. In most cases, I mean, we've seen them pop early, but in most cases, but they could have gone free agent. They could have gone trade. I mean, Matt Stafford was available. Carson Wentz was available, which would have been a better upgrade and a bigger upgrade than what we have now. So it's, I don't know. You know, I don't know the answer why he approached the quarterback position so conservatively and didn't go for one in the draft and didn't go for a big ticket item in free agency, but kind of is operating as, hey, I'm trying to win now for Vic.
Here's my theory. Try this on. I think he thought he was going to be able to come away with Deshaun Watson. I think Deshaun Watson was the big play. And then when it came to drafting a quarterback, we saw who he is on display. This is a lifetime scout. This is an evaluator. This is a guy who does his work, does his evaluations, and probably believes very strongly in his evaluations. And, you know, for everybody who's like, why didn't he draft Justin Fields or Mac Jones? I just don't think he had a high grade on him.
I agree with
you. I think it's as simple as that. I mean, do you honestly think... Help me out on this one. Do you honestly think if, he ended up drafting Pat Surtain. Let's say he did all his evaluation of Surtain and Surtain graded out at a 9.7, okay? I don't know what numbers they use, but let's say it's a 9.7 out of 10.
Yeah.
Do you honestly think that if he had Justin Fields or Mac Jones at a 9.6 or a 9.5, he would have passed on him?
No. Of course he wouldn't have.
Thank you.
You're right on. He just didn't love either one of those quarterbacks. You don't take a quarterback off the list in the draft ever. You know, unless you got, I don't know, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning in their prime, Aaron Rodgers in his prime. I mean, you don't ignore that position, especially in the first round, if you love one of these guys. And so that's exactly right. He didn't love either one of them. He didn't think they were going to be a great quarterback, or he would have taken them. It's a no-brainer.
I think that the conversation surrounding Peyton, that he doesn't understand the importance of the quarterback position, I thought that was a lazy take. I think he does, but I don't think he's going to reach for one, especially going against his...
In his first year?
Yes, and go against his evaluation beliefs. He's not going to, all of a sudden, after waiting for a chance to be an NFL general manager, all of a sudden scrap the beliefs and philosophy that got him to this point. So that's one thing. And I do think he is shrewd enough to see that, hey, there are veteran quarterbacks that are or will be, or had it not been for other circumstances, would have been available. And I want to leave myself in play for those kind of guys. And I strongly suspect that if Deshaun Watson wasn't going through what he was going through or is going through, he'd have been traded by now.
I like that.
And I think that you would have seen George Payton be uber aggressive in that regard.
Yeah, I like that thought process about Deshaun Watson. I hadn't thought about it that to that degree there, but that could have been his main play. And also, when you look at the veteran quarterback market and how much things change from year to year now in the NFL, more quarterbacks are available now every offseason than ever before. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the likes of Phillip Rivers and, you know, Carson Wentz, which you would never think of a couple years ago. You know, the possibility of Deshaun Watson, Aaron Rodgers,
Matthew Stafford.
I mean, these guys are just getting turned over more now than ever.
Right.
So that could be a possibility next year, and waiting possibly for an Aaron Rodgers or Deshaun Watson to get his situation
or
cleared
Russell
up.
Russell Wilson. I mean, there's all
kinds
of
exactly.
So
let me not reach this year.
Right.
Because and look, if he loved one, he would have taken it.
Correct.
That's what you want. You want a young quarterback on his rookie deal. So that tells you he didn't love one. Does he know the importance of the quarterback position? Of course he does. I mean, he's been around the league for a long time. He just got to be the general manager. Everyone knows how important the quarterback position is. He's not naive. He's not, right. You know, he's not dumb. I mean, come on.
Although I guess the skeptic could fire back at you and say, well, wait a minute. He comes from Minnesota, a place that maybe hasn't valued the quarterback position as much as they should. Maybe a place that thinks that they can win without having to.
Well, Mike, they drafted Teddy Bridgewater first round. Was he late first round? And
they did give Kirk Cousins the first ever fully guaranteed contract.
That's what I'm about to tell you. They paid Kirk Cousins a ton of money, fully guaranteed, and they just renegotiated his contract a year ago. So, and gave him a whole lot more money. I think they value the quarterback position. They know
this.
How important it is.
I got this.
They drafted Christian Ponder in the first round.
Yes, they did.
He didn't turn out to be good, but so they have put resources into the quarterback position. They just haven't got it figured out. And that's why eventually they said, well, Kirk Cousins is a good quarterback. He's not a special quarterback, but we need to get that quarterback position filled. So let's give him the first, you know, the biggest guaranteed money in football.
I got this question from somebody. I think it's designed to be anonymous, but it comes from the number 6969. So I wonder who that could be.
Oh.
How can you evaluate a coaching staff if they're forced to play a young quarterback that you drafted?
Mark Slareth. Got some front bitch. Get out here.
Somebody's listening.
Oh, don't get jealous. Me and Mike got good chemistry. I'm starting to become more of a morning person.
Oh, look at you. You hot snot trying to do a little wedge driving.
Well, I don't know what you're talking about, Mike.
Me and my man stink.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I would never step out of
I don't buy that one bit. I don't buy that. For 1 second. give me that question again from Mark.
From 6969?
Yes.
How can you evaluate a coaching staff if they're forced to play a young quarterback that you drafted? Was that maybe part of the other reason why they didn't draft a young quarterback? Because they truly, George Payton truly wants to give Vic Fangio and this staff a chance to show what they can do.
No, absolutely not. You could have still drafted a young quarterback. You don't have to play that quarterback. You don't have to play him right away. It happens all the time. Patrick Mahomes didn't play his rookie season, so you don't have to play him if he's not ready. But you're always looking to fill that void. You understand if you're George Payton, you don't have the answer right now. I mean, 99% chance that Drew Locke's not going to be the starting quarterback here in 3 years. So you always are open to drafting a quarterback, especially when you're sitting there at, what were we, 10? What were the Broncos?
Nine.
Especially when you're drafting at nine, and you got two right there. You always consider that. You don't think about your coaching staff. You let them figure it out. And, you know, if the guy's not ready to play his rookie year, you don't have to play him his rookie year. So I think that's not a good reason why they didn't draft. You think George Payton's concerned about Vic and the staff in 3 years? And like, I want to not draft this next Patrick Mahomes because I'm worried about Vic and Pat?
Do you believe that that George Payton would like to make it work with Vic and this staff, or do you think he's just, hey, I came in here, I'm taking the first year approach of just sitting back and reading everything. I have no real intention of keeping this coaching staff long term, but hey, you know, it fits with the idea that I'm just coming in this first year just to observe.
Well, to George Payton's credit, he is done everything but give Vic a veteran quarterback that, you know, like a Matthew Stafford to win this year. So I take my hat off to him. He's given Vic the opportunity. He didn't have to bring back Vaughn. He could have let Vaughn go and save $19 million, 20 something million against the cap. They didn't even get an extension done. He didn't have to pay Shelby Harris $9 million a year. He didn't have to sign the cornerbacks that he signed and drafted Pat Surtain. He could have drafted a young quarterback. That would have done, that wouldn't help Vic out probably this year as much as a guy like Pat Surtain. Darby, Fuller. I mean, he has spent a lot of money to help Vic out.
Yep.
What was decimated with injuries last year? The cornerback room, right? I mean, we're looking out there seeing guys that were just, you know, on the street, on practice squad. They're trying to cover Julio Jones. I mean, and then they went aggressively at the cornerback position this year and filled and got depth and spent a lot of money there. So he's given Vic all the resources to win this year.
Yeah, I never bought the whole idea that, George Payton's just looking for an excuse to move on. I mean, if you're coming in, wouldn't you like to be able to maintain some continuity? Wouldn't you like to be able to build some continuity? And you understand every time you bring in a new coach, a new coaching staff, new philosophy, you have to draft players, go after free agent players with a different view because of the system that you're trying. Of course you would try to make it work. And this guy,
we're going to have systems.
You need systems. And you would think that George Payton coming from the NFC North would have a lot of respect for a guy like Vic Fangio.
Sure.
So I think he genuinely wants to make it work.
And doesn't he seem like a nice, he's like a nice guy. He's like a nice guy, George Payton. I mean, and you can watch and you can kind of see, you hear people talk about him. He's a nice guy.
I don't think being nice factors in. I think he's looking at it as what makes my job easier.
Be nice.
What makes my job easier. And it certainly would be easier for me to be able to have a coaching staff that I don't have to turn over in year two or year one, you know, right away. You know, the first thing I'm doing is changing over a whole new coaching staff. I'd love to be able to make it work with this guy. So that's part. I've always kind of bristled at the idea that every general manager comes in, he automatically wants his guy, his coach, his quarterback. I don't necessarily. Maybe if it's a guy that's strictly thinking about, from the moment he gets the job, he's into self-preservation. He's into job, you know, cover my butt type stuff. And he figures, hey, if I can bring in my own guy, my own quarterback, that sort of, you know, buys me some time. But I give him credit for saying, hey, look, I'm not coming in here and immediately trying to just strip everything down to the studs. I'd like to make it work with this guy. I like this guy. I respect this guy. This guy is a respected figure in the NFL. I'd like to see it work. What's wrong with that?
Nothing. What has his actions told us? I mean, that tells us everything. I mean, he has given Vic a lot to try to win this year. We've seen different situations. One that comes to mind to me is John Fox's last year in Carolina. I mean, they stripped it bare over there, and they made it almost impossible for him to win. And then they fired him, right? And they started new. And they had a high draft pick. They saved money. They weren't spending money. That's the route you would take. You would just say, hey, we're not going to pay Vaughn. You just start building up salary cap room for future years. They didn't do that at all. So his actions have told us that he is trying to win this year. He's trying to help Vic keep his job. Now it's up to Vic. There's really no excuses here to not win football games, not win enough to keep your job.
By the way, anything you want to say about...
Uh-oh.
Anything you want to say about Paxton Lynch? Any thoughts or observations?
Well, the last time that we had a quarterback situation like this was with Paxton, and that didn't work out too well for us, did it?
What? Listen, Stoke, I am giving you a great opportunity. And yet a huge responsibility at the same time, okay? I'm giving you the opportunity to carry on and extend the Paxton Lynch smear campaign.
I realize that.
All right? So I need something a little bit more, okay? I'll tell you what. Why don't you take these next 5 minutes or so?
I mean, because we still have time. It's not over. So, but you put me okay. Pressure was on, all Mike. Right. All of a sudden, I'm like, what, are we ending the show early today?
Okay. I just want you to know.
You could have done that during the break.
Fine. This is
like wink, wink, Stoke.
You know what?
Over the air.
I'm throwing it down over the air. Yeah.
Wow.
I'm throwing the gauntlet down
over
the air.
I'm
not humiliating you, but I am throwing the challenge down to you.
Okay.
On the air. Yes, I could have just done it during a break.
Right.
Hey, listen,
you have to blast me in front of the media.
I'm not blasting you in front of the media.
In closed doors.
You know, if this keeps going the way it's going, I think you're going to start crying like Paxton.
You couldn't help yourself. I know. You did it, Mike. Right. It's just there.
It's just the low-hanging fruit. You just knocked it out of the park.
Boom.
I got to take the alley-oop,
Great job. That was well done.
But day number 2258 of the Paxton Lynch smear campaign. We still have 35 minutes. So if you want to do it again.
Right.
The other day we did it four times in one show. So
you
if you want to do it again, feel free. All right. Is it just me Friday? We'll get to some of those next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors is the home of zero down. Regardless of your credit or financial situation, Siltahar Motors will help you get behind the wheel. People with poor credit or in bankruptcy can qualify for zero down and no payments for 45 days and be driving in their new car within hours of stopping by the dealership. Check out any of the cars Siltahar Motors currently has on site at sthmotors.com. Siltahar Motors is conveniently located at Highway 36 in Wadsworth, so regardless of your financial situation, Siltahar Motors will get you the car you deserve at sthmotors.com.
Brandon Stokely sitting in for Stink. Got this one on this Is It Just Me Friday. Oh, how about this one? Is it just me or has Stokely shot up to the top of the fan host hierarchy? Dude has developed some serious chops.
Wow, that's a compliment. Is that a compliment?
Oh, that's a huge compliment.
Wow.
Stokely! Wow!
I don't know how to take it. That's the first one I think I've ever gotten on the RamosLaw.com text line.
But you have, and I worked with a lot of ex-athletes, and I think it's the biggest challenge hurdle that you guys have to overcome in making the transition from having been a player to doing this, where, you have to kind of break away from that, hey, I'm just here trying to get better every day, just the cliches. And being able to be critical of the guys and the game that you played. And, it had to be tough early on, right?
Oh, yes, especially when you're...
I mean, you probably always had some sort of a filter that you were running everything through, and there was almost that, that almost built in.
Yes.
Like, as soon as you started, wait a minute, maybe I should,
Right.
That you had to break
Absolutely.
Through.
Absolutely. I mean, that's your teammates, most of those, that's your guys, when you're looking at and talking about a guy like, Demaryius Thomas, that's my guy, right? Love him. So it's hard to be critical of him. But at a certain point, I think, as a former athlete, I didn't mind if people were critical of my play or what happened out on the football field, just as long as they were fair. And so I always tried to be fair if I had to criticize. And, obviously ran into a couple situations with Vaughn.
Yeah.
Just with takes on different things. And, it's just kind of, it's part of the territory, right? I mean, you have to speak your mind, you have to have your opinion, and but I treated you know, radio like I did football. I was just trying to be critical of myself. I was trying to improve and get better, and I do. I enjoy it, so it's always nice to hear, you know, nice things like that.
Well, you have oh, Mike, very much improved over the years. You keep getting better.
Trying,
of course. You work with a great host too. Zach is
he's not bad. He's no Mike Evans, but you know he's not bad.
He's solid. He's coming on fast too. Okay. All right. Now maybe that has more to do with you.
That's okay. Hey, groomed him well.
You've groomed him well.
Yes. Okay. I feel good about how.
But his is a bright star shining right now. There's no doubt about that. From Larry Legend, is it just me? We're still going with retaining this coaching staff was George Payton's decision? We still pretending that Elway got fired upstairs? That Elway isn't really still very much involved?
Well, they weren't moving away from Vic and his staff. No matter, you know, that decision was made before they hired the general manager. He knew coming in he was going to be stuck with us. This is your coaching staff for 1 year. They weren't going to hire him and then all of a sudden start looking for a coaching staff. That wasn't going to happen here, especially with the ownership situation and how much it costs to replace coaches. You just replaced one a couple years ago. There was a lot in play here that there was no chance they were firing this coaching staff after and letting George Payton fire. So he knew coming in, you're stuck with this group for at least 1 year.
Okay, then, but that wasn't a John Elway edict, was it?
John's the one that – didn't John make the decision? I can't recall, like, the timeline, but I believe after the season, wasn't it John that made the decision to keep the coaching staff before he decided to move on, or was it
– Right, but George Payton, George Payton could have said, I'm not taking the job unless I have the ability to – you know, blow out a coaching staff.
He could have. And they probably would have said, well, up front, you know, when you're doing the interview, you're like, hey, this is the deal here. You know, if we're going to move forward here, this coaching staff, we have got to keep them. You know, we've gone through too many coaches. We've got too much money invested in coaches. Are you okay with keeping this coaching staff for one more year? At least
and
1 year.
And
we'll let you evaluate and then you make your decision.
And understand
after
we've got a lot of uncertainty with the ownership situation.
Yes.
Right.
That's up front.
But back to the original point. Do you believe George Payton's in charge or is John Elway still in charge?
No, George Payton.
Yes, of course.
George Payton. I mean, John does. I think John's out. Like, he wants to enjoy his life.
Yeah.
He's not grinding. He's not. I think here, George Payton, have it. He had his run. And if John Elway wanted to still be the general manager, guess what? John Elway would still be the general manager. Don't believe that? He only had one more year, Mike. He only had one more year. I think if John Elway really wanted to be...
I think Joe Ellis was prepared to move on.
Maybe.
Ellis was prepared to move on.
I think it would have been hard for Joe to move on from John if John wanted to stay. If John fought it and wanted to stay. But I think John was... I think they both kind of, like they said, they came to an agreement. John wanted to move on.
Right. It would
enjoy
have been,
his life.
Yeah, agreed.
I mean, he's out.
Yeah,
you know,
the what if would have been had... John not already kind of been down the road already.
Right. Yes.
You know, when maybe Joe proposed it.
Right. And who knows?
Who knows
what would have happened?
True.
We could speculate both ways, and I could see both sides of the argument.
But the fact is, we're both in agreement. George Payton's running this show.
I'm glad that that's the way you've... A lot of people think that Elway is still pulling all this. I mean, Elway is not grinding.
No.
He wants to enjoy, you know, golf, retirement, you know, getting to, you know, wherever, Montana, wherever he's got his places at. I mean, that's what he wants to enjoy. You know, I mean, so to think that John's grinding over film, he knows what it takes to be successful in that position. I mean, you got to grind, I think, is that's just ridiculous. I can't go there.
And now, if Larry Legend had said, hey, let's not kid ourselves, you know, Joe Ellis was responsible for George Payton retaining the coaching staff, I'll listen to that.
Sure.
I'll totally listen to that.
Yes.
You know, with the idea that, hey, for all the reasons we just laid out.
Money, ownership,
all that. Let's make that a Joe Ellis issue more than it was a John Elway issue. Okay, let's see. We'll get to some more. Is it just me? guys, with the Olympics starting, is it just me, or are the Olympics every bit as corrupt as the NCAA and FIFA?
I think they're all right there.
You know who? Do you know what FIFA is?
Is that like, is that hockey?
That's
not hockey.
Soccer.
Sorry, Hans. Wrong guess. Close.
It's like the NCAA,
right?
The major soccer organizations.
Yes,
same
they're
thing?
All corrupt.
Corrupt.
They all are. I mean, they all go to jail. No, I don't know anybody NCAA is going to jail, but, you know, the FIFA people go to jail from the World Cup stuff, hockey. I mean, the Olympics. I mean, you always see bribing going on in the Olympic Committee and stuff like that. So, yes, they're all very, very corrupt. And I think those two, when you talk about the FIFA and you talk about the Olympics, those two are more way more corrupt than the NCAA.
Which is why all this... you know, saber rattling about, fear mongering the Olympics, they could be shut down at any moment. I should never say no way, but to me, I look at these Olympic games the same way I look at the NFL season a year ago. Too big to fail. Too much money. Too much money for this thing not to, there was never a doubt in my mind that the NFL would finish their season. I mean, when I hear hearing people say, there's about a 30% chance of the NFL. I was like, no way. Too much money.
Too much. I like that. That's a good point.
In this case, you take the money that the NFL had at stake. It's dwarfed by what is going on at stake with the Olympics.
And they're already there. The party started. Yeah.
They're not stopping it.
Party's continues.
Yeah, it's going to continue. But because the Olympics are so corrupt, in your words, you can still yet enjoy them?
Oh, yeah.
There isn't the part of you that's like, God, this whole thing that I'm watching just gives me, you know, makes my skin, I need to take a shower with
it. No, because for the athletes and how long they've trained, and you watch them, you know, train for 4+ years, or their whole life for one moment possibly, and they accomplish that goal, and there's only one of one. Right. There's not like, you know, two people don't get a gold in the 100 meters. Yeah. You know, it's just one person. I mean, that to me is, you know, sports at its finest.
I know I got a break, but is the part of you as an athlete, can you even wrap your mind around that? I mean, you played a sport where, hey, you had 16 games to go out and prove yourself. Can you imagine doing all that training, all that preparation, all that competing for something that could mean the difference of 200ths of a second from meddling or not?
Makes me nervous watching it. I get anxiety watching it.
Yeah,
I was watching Michael Phelps, and Michael Phelps had been there a bunch, but you knew this was his last one, and you just wanted to do so well. And you know, you look at certain individuals, you hear the stories and the perseverance and the fighting through adversity, and here they are, they got the one chance. I get nervous, I get anxiety for them. I'm like, I can't imagine that. Right? I had 16 weeks, 17 weeks. You know, you get a bunch of different seasons. They only get one, really, just one
teammate you can lean upon if you're having, you know, I don't really feel it today, but that guy's going to pick it up.
Yep.
In the Olympics, it's you.
That's it.
You.
Nothing better.
Woof. All right. That's why we glorify what these men and women are able to do. All right. It's an Is It Just Me Friday. We'll come back, wrap it up next. This is different, David Bowie. Then this is not Chili Chili Wonga. Wonder if Stink's driving along right now listening to Itchy Woman. He tried to get me in an O'Reilly yesterday, Stokely.
Did he really?
Yeah, he's like, he made reference to the song Itchy Woman, you know, waiting for me to say, you mean Witchy Woman? Then he would say, oh, really? Like, I've got to walk into that trap.
You're a veteran. You're a pro. Come on.
Neither one of us have been able to get the other for good. How long's it been, Ben? See what I just did there, Ben? Over a year?
Wow.
Since one of us got the other. Now, it happened quite frequently early on, but now we're both
pros.
We're so on top of our game that...
Well, y'all are on top of y'all game like Paxton was on top of his game.
Oh! I like it. Not bad.
I got it in. It was better than my first attempt, I felt, anyway.
Okay, very good. Nicely done. You're learning. Look at my little shaver. Learning, right?
Yes, right. See? Right,
they grow up so fast.
I'm coachable.
They grow up so fast.
Coach's dream.
It's mind-boggling.
So next week we jump into it. Training camp.
It's here.
It's here.
Can you believe that?
Do you have the... Mark always talks about how he basically from July 4th on, he's got a pit in his stomach thinking about the start of camp. Did you have that same kind of unease and just like almost like dread?
Yes, absolutely.
Not anticipation.
No, dread.
Not like, hey, camp.
Dread. High anxiety.
Dread.
Most of the time I'm fighting for a job and you realize that, hey, I could be in a totally different situation here in a month. I could be out on the street. I might not ever play another down of football. Injuries happen. Things happen quickly. And so there's a lot of anxiety that goes, especially when you don't have security. Now, you sign a nice deal or whatever, you know you're going to be there, right? You relax a lot more. But when you're fighting for your livelihood, your job, and you realize that, it could change so quickly, it's tough.
15 years in the NFL, how many of those 15 years did you go into camp with that sense of, I'm fighting for my job, my career?
My second year in the NFL was one. Anytime you go to a new team, there's anxiety about, showing them something. I didn't think I was fighting for my job my first year with Indy, my fifth year in the league, but I was hurt. So there's anxiety there. With the Giants, I felt like I didn't go to camp with them, but I signed there after the season. So I would say there's probably, not a ton of them, but if there's not anxiety about your job, there's anxiety about something else. Yeah. That's just kind of, I always felt that pressure. But yes, when you get into July and you start thinking about camp, you realize that, the life that I know or that I've been living here, going to play golf, going to work out hard for a couple, then going to play golf, then family time, pool time, whatever, it's great. Off season's great. You hear these players complain about the off season. Give me a break. It's great. It's awesome. And now that's coming to an end. And training camp used to be not fun. Two-a-days, like grind, like sore. Just like, oh my gosh, and you're away from your family. And when I had young kids, gosh, just going away, like, we were in Indy, we'd go away, it's like an hour and a half away, and leaving your wife and your two young kids behind us, that hurts. And that adds to a lot. So yes, training camp wasn't like you're looking forward to it. Now when you get to camp, and you get to be around the guys, that's awesome, right? You're in the same dorms with them and stuff, or hotel. That's fun. Evenings are fun. You have fun, but at the same time, you're tired, you're sore. It's Groundhog's Day. It feels like 2 days feels like it's been 2 weeks. So it's a grind. It's not fun.
What kind of anxiety did Josh McDaniels cause you?
I loved Josh my first year.
Really?
Oh.
Really?
Me and him talked more maybe than any coach that I had.
No kidding.
During practices, we were the same age, and we got along great. And then until my second year, I got hurt in camp, and it's like he didn't even know me. I'm like, what is going on? That's when I knew I was getting cut. I'm like, what is going on here? Like, he won't even talk to me anymore, which was weird. It's like, oh, I get it. I've been around this league for a long time. If you gotta cut me, just let me know. Like, I felt like we had that type of relationship, and it didn't turn out to quite be like that from his perspective.
Yeah, everybody, and I got to know him a little bit. Everybody liked him away from football, but there was, I gotta think he looks back on that time here and says, like, man, if I had just been more of myself instead of trying to just be a mini Bill Belichick, how different would it have worked out? Because so many people have shared stories like the one you just said. Good guy, down to earth guy, relatable guy,
yes.
Funny guy.
Yes.
And
good coach.
Good coach.
Hard worker. Yes. All of those things.
And yet, he never really let those qualities and characteristics come through. And I still wonder what it would have been like, how it would have worked out here if they hadn't given him full control.
Right.
If it had just been, look, come in here, we have an established general manager, you know, and you're going to coach.
Right. It would have been much better.
Coach.
Much better.
I think it would have worked out pretty well.
Yeah.
I really do.
It would have been much better. You know, he got a lot of power really quickly.
And he didn't know how to handle it.
Didn't know how to handle it. You know, you hear guys talk about him as, you know, from New England, like as their quarterback coach, as their offensive coordinator. They have nothing but great things to say about him. He just, like you said, he tried to be somebody that he wasn't. And, you know, after a great start, it just came apart so quick. But if he looks back on it, I guarantee you, yes, he's a smart guy. He would do things a lot different.
So you think now. you think if given a second chance, he could be a pretty good coach?
I think he would do things differently. I do. So I don't know what that would look like, but I do think that he realizes his faults here. Mm-hmm. He's smart enough to, and I hope he does. Right, I hope he does, because it wasn't just the football side. It's how you manage people. It's how you manage assistant coaches. Like, you can't be a, you know what, to the people that are, and I'm just saying that he was, but to the people that are working in the building. You know, you got to make them feel good. You got to make them feel like when they go to work, they're going to have fun. Your assistant coaches, right? You can't treat them like just, you know what? I mean, you can't treat them like that. And a lot of them despised him and hated working for him. And, that's a big part of it. Maybe Bill could get away with some of that stuff. But you can't do that. And he did a little bit too much of that. So I think he would change and be different, if he got another opportunity.
Nebraska Brian, he drafted Tebow. He's an idiot. Mm. Okay. Last one, is it just me? I really enjoyed listening to you this morning, Stoke.
You
strike me as the kind of guy that probably cuts your own lawn, unlike Mark Schlereth.
Yes, day one of the Mark Schlereth smear campaign. There we go.
Play the music. Ready? Day number one. Thank you so much for filling in. That was a lot of fun.
Thanks for having me, buddy. I appreciate it. A total blast. So thanks for having me, Ben. Appreciate y'all. And Mike, y'all have everybody have a great weekend.
Great weekend.
Enjoy yourself. Thanks, buddy.
And go hit them straight.
I hope so. That's the plan. Doesn't always work out like that.
Oh, you don't need to tell me that. Sandy in Orlando coming up next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.